The House Transportation Committee will come to order. Welcome, everybody. We're going to go a little out of sequence because we have a couple of legislators that want to speak to House Bill 3379. So we'll go ahead and open the public hearing on House Bill 3379. And Patrick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 3379 has a subsequent referral to revenue and a subsequent referral to ways and means. This is the measure that establishes City Transportation Improvement Fund. It authorizes issuance of lottery bonds to finance grants and loans for transportation projects that provide significant economic benefit to communities within a city's urban growth boundary. It allows cities to apply for an extension or submit alternative if unable to meet the transportation planning rule requirements. It creates a critical transportation needs income tax sequestration pilot project and authorizes issuance of revenue bonds to fund the project and directs the Department of Revenue to sequester tax revenues from sequestration zones to be used to repay those bonds. This measure has an effective date of the 91st day following adjournment.
Thank you, Patrick. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and call up, I have Representative Edwards, Representative Huffman, and Senator Whitsitt, if you all want to come up. No? All right. I guess so. And
thank you, Madam Chair. Committee members, I appreciate the opportunity to testify today. For the record, my name is Doug Whitsitt. I represent Senate District 28. I'm here to testify in strong support of House Bill 3379. I want to tell a true story as an example of why of the problem that needs to be fixed and how I think this bill may help to address that. Let a developer come to Klamath Falls with $100 million to develop four big box stores and the mall and everything to go with it. This guy had the funds. He wanted to develop what he called the Shasta View Shopping Center. It was scheduled to be opened last Thanksgiving. This construction project would have employed 1,800 people for about a year and a half to build and would have had up to 3,000 full-time employees when finished. The plan was blessed by the planning department, by the county commission, by the city council. But the land use decision was appealed by ODOT and DLCD. ODOT appealed the transportation planning rule, and DLCD appealed both the transportation rule and the process under which the land use decision was made, even though the land use master plan had been adopted by and signed off on by the LCD. ODOT wanted several million dollars up front from either the city or the county or the developer in order to preemptively build all the transportation improvements that their model said would be necessary to use over the next 15 to 20 years. So after about 18 months of negotiations, we actually got together with ODOT pretty closely. They leveraged quite a lot of money out of the developer, and we had planned to do a tax increment financing on the property tax in order to get the money to put up front to get this project going. Department of DLCD, unfortunately, did not go along with that and decided that the best way to move forward with the project was to downsize it to one big box store in the mall. Obviously, that removed the collateral necessary for the tax increment financing. The bottom line is that regardless of their intent, we have an open field now where a shopping center with four big box stores that would be now employing up to 3,000 people should be standing. We had no construction jobs, no full-time employment, no property tax base established, no economic development. Klamath County enjoys a real unemployment of about 25% right now. The jobs lost by killing this project could have reduced that county employment by almost one-third, that one development. So much for efficient land use and transportation planning. This opportunity is lost. But we must do all that we can do to ensure that the tragedy such as the agency-driven demise of Shasta View Center is not repeated. I think that House Bill 3379 will provide the means to create the revenue stream to accommodate the transportation needs associated with economic development, and particularly in rural areas. To prevent economic development solely to reduce potential future congestion is not planning. It's economic genocide. I urge your strong support. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions yet? So, Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. For the record, my name is David Edwards. I'm the state representative from House District 30, which encompasses Greater Hillsborough, North Plains, and Roy and Verbort in Washington County. Let me put this bill in a broader context. For those of you who may be new to the committee, the transportation planning rule is something that the Department of Land and Conservation and Development established in 2005, or rather amended in 2005, which mandated that all projects necessitated by zone change applications not only be planned, but also fully funded for the entirety of a 20-year period. This has meant essentially that any city which proposes an economic development project that has any impact on a state highway system must demonstrate how it will fund all of the costs associated with the upgrades that will be needed to fully expand the highway system to accommodate the expected demands over that 20-year period. Now, this is both unreasonable and impractical for a number of reasons. First, as you know, there are severely limited funds for highway improvements. Secondly, even if the money were available from the state, the funding window for the state transportation improvement projects is only 4 years. So it's virtually impossible for a local community with limited resources to be able to guarantee state funding for the full 20 years of the project as required by the rule. Thirdly, many of the zone changes anticipate the need to plan for and work towards economic development over a long period. But under the new restrictions, a project that needs to be planned or partially developed but may not be fully implemented for 15 or 20 years won't even be allowed to proceed at all until all of the funding is identified. And lastly, growth from outside the urban growth boundaries has basically pushed a lot of communities over the limit identified by the rule and essentially creates a moratorium on economic development. In my own community, for instance, Washington County recently identified two new industrial parks that, once fully occupied, are expected to employ up to 10,000 people. However, to site any sizable business in either one of those parks will put us in violation of the transportation planning rule. So without any change in that rule, we will be prohibited, basically, from using those industrial parks for their allotted purposes. So this bill essentially does three things. First, as the good senator indicated, the bill will provide a unique tax increment financing system to basically allow local governments to draw a line around an area that will grow as a result of development, capture up to 75% of the income tax revenue from the jobs in that area, and use the revenue to repay bonds that the state will put up to construct the necessary highway improvements. Secondly, it will revise the transportation planning rule to allow local governments to apply for exceptions that will allow the community to go ahead as planned, economic development projects, rather, to go ahead as planned, even if the state is unable to provide guaranteed long-term funding for its share of the highway system. And thirdly, it will modify some ODOT traffic and performance standards to be flexible enough to allow for various types of traffic performance measures other than just a volume-to-capacity ratio. For instance, you could measure corridor travel times and driver expectancy, create a volume-to-capacity measure that works somewhat differently than the current rule, or define corridors in the metropolitan planning areas as having congestion tolerances or other types of allowances. But basically, this bill is designed to ensure that economic development is not put on hold because of an unreasonable requirement for transportation. I understand as well that the department has submitted some amendments to the bill, basically clarifying the authorities responsible for reviewing proposed exceptions and drawing the boundaries for the tax sequestration areas. The department's amendments are also designed to ensure that, or I'd rather clarify, that monies raised for a particular tax sequestration area are not distributed to other regions, but instead are used for that particular locality. And with that, I will be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Representative Burgess.
It's an interesting concept. What you're, if I understand you correctly, tell me if I'm wrong, what you're proposing is a transportation urban renewal district around development that has the potential to increase employment and economic activity substantially in order to get around the fact that our statewide agency doesn't allow for such development for reasons of we won't particularly go into. Is that kind of what I'm hearing? In other words, instead of telling the statewide agency to get a clue, we're developing urban renewal sequestration districts.
Chair Beyer, Representative Berger, I think that's a very accurate description. This bill would be addressing the shortcomings of a rural which does not fit many areas of Oregon.
Thank you very much. I just wanted that on the record.
Thank you. I don't see any other questions.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming in today. I have Mayor George Endicott, Mayor Denny Ross, and Eric King. And I didn't say. First one was George Endicott, Mayor Redmond, Mayor Denny Ross from Maupin, and Eric King from Bend, City Manager from Bend. Oh, and I'm skipping over names. So. I'm going to correct myself a little bit because I have. It's been pointed out that I'm glossing over names here. So. Mayor Endicott, and you had Chris Doty.
Doty, yes, ma'am.
Doty. Do you want him up here with you?
Please.
Okay, so why don't we go ahead and bring him up, and I'll get this straightened out.
Sorry.
That's okay. Welcome. And go ahead.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is George Endicott. I'm Mayor of Redmond. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak about House Bill 3379 regarding support for alternative funding methods for the transportation planning rule. I am speaking in favor of House Bill 3379. Changes were made by the Department of Land Conservation and Development to the administrative rules in 2005, which has in some cases dramatically impacted local jurisdictions' ability to pursue economic development. We recognize the need for the Oregon Department of Transportation and the Oregon Department, and the Oregon Transportation Commission to maximize throughput on state highways. At the same time, we must find solutions to adverse impacts so that communities can continue to grow and thrive. A grassroots effort by the cities has culminated in what you see before you today. We think we have identified a truly innovative approach and with some modifications could help solve a problem that impacts all jurisdictions that wish to grow or change zoning within an urban area. As an example, three separate jurisdictions own continuous property within Redmond city limits. When we began discussions about rezoning the property so that we could expand industrial opportunities in Redmond, ODOT reminded us that we need to develop a transportation strategy and funding sources that would mitigate the impact on the state transportation system. Certainly some tools are available to help, but the need to improve the road network still is required. With a tool such as this proposal, we could identify and estimate positive results and give ODOT at least some funding it needs to help support road improvements. One example of that as well is that the STIP, which is the ODOT planning horizon is 4 years, whereas in a city, by DLCD standards, we have a 20-year transportation planning system. So those two don't match up at all, and it does create some issues for us. Finally, I would like to ask Mr. Doty, our Redmond Public Works Director, to provide some additional technical details. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you. For the record, Chris Doty, I'm Public Works Director for the City of Redmond. As Public Works Director, it's my job to figure out how to serve new growth in our city with transportation infrastructure. And most of you, I think, are probably very familiar with the amount of growth we've had in Redmond and in Central Oregon in general. For the most part, cities can fund those long-term capital projects with the tools we have in our toolbox. We have property tax, we have systems development charges, we have urban renewals is a very valuable tool, and local transportation utility fees and things of that nature. And while we're not at all rich or well-funded, we can certainly get those long-term capital projects planned in queue and going as we grow as a part of our growth plans. We can also fund, I think, our impact to the state highway system to the degree to which we have that impact long-term as well. What we can't do is do all those local improvements and then fund all the planned state highway transportation system improvements through our community as well. Many times those are orders of magnitude in scale and funding size much larger than the projects we have. So where we can fund our own local system improvements, we can't bring on that added burden from the state. Now, the changes that were made to the transportation planning rule in 2005 basically require us to do that if we are to satisfy the transportation planning rule. And ODOT, as we know, doesn't have any funds to contribute long-term to projects. So utilizing a unique form of tax increment financing, House Bill 3379 will provide the state also that significant tool in their toolbox to help them deal with long-term funding of capital projects in cities. Utilizing TIF financing through income tax rather than property tax in a manner similar to how cities use urban renewal as a funding tool. This is a tool that the state desperately needs. We are the tip of the iceberg. We've been growing like gangbusters in Central Oregon. As more cities grow and continue to update their transportation system plans and comply with the transportation planning rule, we're going to hear about this again and again and again. We're the tip of the iceberg. So we're going to hear more about this if we don't do something about it. So with that, we ask that you please support this bill. And also I'd like to note that we do have some amendments we have been working on that address the concerns of ODOT and the counties as well. And so I'll be submitting those. Thank you.
All right.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to testify today for House Bill 3379. For the record, I'm Dennis Ross. I'm the mayor of Maupin. Now you may wonder what Maupin is doing here, worried about something that doesn't happen at a city of 490 people. But we have aspirations of growing. And so this is a good bill, and it should pass, so that when we get to where we have the magnitude of worries about this particular issue that approach those of Redmond and some of the other cities, we won't have to worry about it. So thank you very much for working this bill, and that's all I have.
Thank you. Committee, any questions for the panel? I don't see any. Thank you. Okay, we can bring back Eric King and Eileen Stein, who I skipped over. And how about Jack Eiselman?
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Eric King. I'm the city manager for the City of Bend. Thank you for allowing me this opportunity to express the City of Bend's support for House Bill 3379. We feel that this bill represents an innovative problem-solving approach with the intent to address the city's number one barrier towards increasing the amount of industrial land in a very critical time. The changes to the transportation planning rule in 2005, as already noted, which mandated that all projects necessitated by a zone change application not only be fully planned but also fully funded for the entirety of the 20-year planning period, have placed a halt on our ability to add industrial land to our current inventory. Given that State Highway 97 runs through our community, all of our industrial land is located within close proximity to the highway, but is not yet zoned. There's also a significant amount of congestion that already exists on the state highway. And given all that, we are unable to move forward with any rezone of property until a project is fully funded, which is estimated to be $50 million. And that is only a midterm solution. The full solution to Highway 97 is upwards of $400 million. Specifically, the transportation planning rule amendments excuse ODOT from helping fund any project that is outside of their four-year transportation improvement plan, which then forces cities to fund 100% of ODOT projects within their transportation systems plan capital improvement plan in order to satisfy the TPR and permit zone changes within our urban growth boundary. While it's fair to ask a city to pay for improvements necessitated by growth within its UGB, it's not fair to have them pay for improvements required by 20 years of through traffic growth estimated on the state highway system. The TPR does not provide for flexibility or proportionality, therefore it can render property undevelopable, creating a de facto moratorium, as mentioned earlier. The question becomes, what comes first, economic development or funding for 20-year transportation improvements? It's simply too unreasonable to expect local governments to fund entire state highway projects with no financial assistance from the state. With unemployment in Deschutes County over 12%, we need some flexibility in how we interpret state land use and transportation planning rules for the sake of creating more employment land. Just to give you an example, over about a year ago, we were one of several communities competing for a photovoltaic manufacturer that would have created over 1,000 jobs, new jobs. Unfortunately, we were eliminated given the uncertainty surrounding the traffic impacts on the north end of town. So I want to impress upon the committee that the status quo helps no one. We need to see change in how the state prioritizes economic development. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Better put these on. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Eileen Stein. I'm the city manager and sisters. Thank you for hearing House Bill 3339 today. The City of Sisters shares the concerns about the transportation planning rule that have been expressed by other cities here and the other regions that you're hearing from. The state of Oregon has classified Sisters as severely economically distressed, if you can believe that. And we are encouraged by the Economic and Community Development Department. We're encouraged by the department to take advantage of the state's resources and programs in order to address this label. In 2006, the Sisters Ranger District undertook a project to modernize, relocate, and consolidate its administrative offices, shrink its footprint, and use a new federal authority to sell the excess land in order to pay for these new facilities. The Forest Service proposed the sale of a 53-acre parcel adjacent to the downtown area, adjacent to light industrial lands and bordered by U.S. Highway 20 on the west. And in my letter there's a diagram, aerial diagram of the city, so you can see the area where they would consolidate and relocate to and the area that's labeled excess. The city engaged in a community-wide planning process to create a new vision for the property, part of which is included in the city's urban renewal district. The plan envisioned a mixed-use zone, including new affordable housing. The plan itself was very specific, with very specific sideboards about how the property would develop, including square footage of buildings, landscape standards, all of the detail in a conceptual framework. At the tail end of this long planning effort, as the city was preparing a comprehensive plan amendment and zone change to implement the new vision, the city was advised by the Department of Land Conservation and Development that doing so would trigger the TPR and require the city to pay for the improvements associated with any impacts to Highway 20. In order to help encourage the sale of the land anyway, the city instead adopted a more generic comp plan language, indicating the city's willingness to consider a zone change when and if the land sold. Ultimately, the Forest Service received no bids for the property. We believe that the TPR had a chilling effect on the bidding process, and indeed the Forest Service shared this with us after soliciting feedback from several potential bidders about their reasons for not submitting a bid for the land. It is uncertain when the Forest Service will attempt to sell the land again. As such, our community lost out on an important economic development opportunity. Please work with us in addressing the impacts of this rule. Every means of restarting our economy needs to be considered in this difficult economic time. Thank you. Thank you.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, for the record, Jack Esselman of Tonkin Torp. I'm appearing today on behalf of my client, the City of Hillsborough. I'll just briefly echo the testimony delivered by our representative, David Edwards, here today. We're seeing the transportation planning rule impact us, in particular on State Highway 26 as it relates to our predominant economic development area. We think the solutions proposed by House Bill 3379 are an innovative way to address these impacts, and therefore we strongly support the bill. We are working with the proponents on some minor technical amendments to the bill as it relates to the state's strategic investment program and some changes to that program that were put in place last session. But we're confident we will be able to achieve that successfully with the sponsors, and we encourage your consideration and passage of this bill.
Thank you. Any questions? Jack, as you're working on amendments, I'm assuming that there's the hand and growth one that we have here don't include your concerns.
Chair Beyer, not at this point, but our amendment we think is fairly straightforward and simple, a couple sentences, so we're not too concerned about having that addressed.
Okay, thank you. Representative Benz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess for any one of you, do you have any idea how these zones would be measured, sized? I don't see anything in here that specifically states the size of the zone. What's your understanding of how that would work?
Just to give you an example, in Bend, we have close to 500 acres within our urban growth boundary. Right now, it's zoned urban area reserve. We'd like to rezone that to light industrial, but that zone change is triggering the transportation planning rule. So that's just an example of the we're looking at about 250 of that 500 acres to be rezoned to light industrial. Does that address your question?
Follow-up, Madam Chair.
Yes, follow-up.
I was just looking at Section 10. It says for each transportation project established under 9, the Department of Revenue shall identify an amount of income taxes derived from the sequestration zone determined as follows. A, all personal income taxes of residents shall be allocated to the zone. So I'm just curious, what's the zone and who what do you guys have in mind?
Well, I think the concept is as land gets developed within a specific geographic area where you're currently constrained by the transportation planning rule, any new jobs or new growth that occurs in that area, a percentage of the income tax generated gets used as a revenue stream to pay back bonds for transportation improvements.
Follow up?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Possibly, I don't know, Jack, did you have an idea on this?
Yeah, Chair Beyer, Representative Benz, I'm certainly not an expert in the application of the transportation planning rule, but my understanding is when it is applied, a geographic area is examined in terms of the area where you would put development and how that would impact the local transportation options. As I read this bill, my understanding of it is that you'd have an overlay, essentially, of that same area where you'd sequester taxes. So, in other words, the area that's proposed for development that would impact the transportation infrastructure, that area would also be the sequestration zone.
And so the thought would be that the Transportation Commission would identify that area, and then a portion or all of the tax would go to this zone. The way I read it, it looks as though it's all. Is that your thinking?
Well, I know there's 75% of income tax revenues in the first year. I'm looking at Section 10, Subsection 2A. All personal taxes, a portion of corporate income and excise taxes that are present in the zone using an apportionment formula. And then we have, I think it's 75% that's coming back, and then some that's withheld in the fund, as I understand it.
Thank you.
Representative Shoffman.
Thank you. I understand we're at 12% unemployment in Oregon today. outside of the details of this bill, clearly we have to do something about that. And fortunately, transportation projects prevail, so we don't have to have that argument. But we should also be letting bonds out, Madam Chair, for water development and a long list of other things. So when we get the details hammered out on this and start building some roads, I look forward to that day.
Thank you, Representative Schaffler. And with that, sorry, I missed it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was late with my hand up, and I apologize if this was already addressed while I was out of the room, or if there's somebody better to address this question to. But I'm curious. This has been described a little bit as urban renewal or tax increment financing for transportation, and if I'm correct in my understanding, the theory behind traditional tax increment financing is that you have an infrastructure investment that has a pretty direct link to an increase in property values, so you can almost answer a but-for question. But for this infrastructure investment, you wouldn't have an increase in property values that then is sequestered to pay back the bonds for that infrastructure development. Sometimes that doesn't happen, sometimes it does, but it's a fairly direct link. In this case, the link between transportation investments and increase in personal income seems to be a little bit more tenuous, or at least there are a couple of iterations of steps there between those two things. And to me, the but-for question is a little bit less clear. So could you address a little bit what happens? Do you see that link as being direct? And what happens if a transportation project does not lead to a growth in personal income and those bonds still need to be repaid?
Well, I see a pretty direct link. I mean, the example that I provided, we had a photovoltaic manufacturing company that was going to bring in 1,000 new jobs to this area. Those jobs didn't occur because of the uncertainty surrounding the transportation planning rule and kind of the timing of, because not only do we have this rule, but we have to go through a NEPA process for the north end of Bend. So we can't even identify what is a midterm solution until we get that two-year process complete. So if we were to have some way, some certainty in funding, which would help maybe accelerate things, that's a direct connection to bringing jobs to this area, which would create, these are new jobs that, you know, a portion of that would be sequestered to pay for this infrastructure. So I see a direct link in our specific example there. I don't know if others can provide.
Madam Chair, Representative Bailey, I was going to echo the same thing. If it's not for the ability to make the transportation improvements to allow the areas to even develop, there is no job creation. So there is a very direct link.
And Chair Beyer, Representative Bailey, just another point on that. The transportation planning rule seems to get triggered when you're talking about fairly significant development in terms of job density. So I think it is the hope of the proponents of this bill that you would see considerable wages being generated within the sequestration zone as a result of the transportation planning rule being triggered in the first place.
Representative Call.
Yeah, I have a couple questions, and maybe this isn't the panel to answer it, so if you want to kick this can down the road a piece, that's okay with me. But Jack's pretty smart, so he might be able to answer this. My question is, you know, the transit advocates in the room will tell you that they're constantly having to show 20 years of operational costs ahead of time before they can draw down any dollars, before they can invest in any new bus lines, new rail lines, new anything. And that makes their systems work pretty well, to my way of thinking. And we're discussing a transportation package right now where we're looking at hundreds of millions of dollars of unfunded maintenance and preservation liability every year. And it seems to me that the transportation planning rule is one of the things that kind of helps us forestall adding new systems, new roads to a system that already is unfunded or underfunded, dramatically underfunded. And my concern is that anything like this would allow us to circumvent the transportation planning rule, bring new roads, new transportation systems online that we don't have any hope of funding into the future. So can you help me assuage that fear?
Well, I think it needs to be made clear that at least I know we are supportive of an increase in revenue going towards transportation for funding. So I think that goes without saying. So I agree with you in that we can't just build new interchanges, new infrastructure without the ability to maintain it. So you can't look at them in isolation. But I guess for that the reason why we proposed the TPR the way that we did, or this bill the way that we did, is that we didn't want to just say change the rule without having some mechanism to fund it. And that's why, you know, that's sort of the thrust behind this, is that it does provide a funding mechanism. So.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Representative Call, I guess I would add to that that this bill was envisioned before we knew how far the legislature might be going with a transportation funding package this session, so we do appreciate that work very, very much. As the state continues to be focused on economic development, again, this bill is designed to provide a funding mechanism to be able to continue to develop jobs in the state. And so there is a direct link.
Thank you. Sorry. I guess what my question is does this bill, I guess what I'm trying to figure out is what the funding mechanism actually funds. Does it negate the 20-year rule and say we're only going to use these funds to build the new development and you don't have to show 20 years worth of operational funds, as it were? Or does this bill say we're actually going to give you a new mechanism, but you still have to jump through the transportation planning rule hoop? You still have to show 20 years worth of funding, but this is how you're going to be able to do it.
Right.
Yeah. Chair Beyer, Representative Call, I think you're getting at kind of a key distinction here between highway infrastructure and transit infrastructure, and that being the transportation planning rule really gets at capacity. And highway capacity. Capacity actually in some ways being a subset of operations and having an operational highway system. When you talk about the 20-year planning rule for transit, I think there you're more focused on the ability to fund the operations of your transit infrastructure looking out 20 years. Because add-on capacity on a transit system, particularly rail, is incrementally much easier than it is with highway infrastructure. So I think that's an important distinction between capacity costs and the role capacity plays in highway operations versus the similar situation in transit.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And with that, I'm going to ask Representative Wisnett to come up. And former Representative Dennis Loop, come on.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Gene Wisnett, House District 53. I've talked a lot today, so I'll try to make this brief. It's got DLCD. That's one of my favorite topics here. I understand that Representative Edwards, who was one of the key sponsors on this bill, along with Representative Huffman and Senator Telfer, and also Representative Stevens, want to know she supports strongly this bill. So, Madam Chair, that's the main reason I'm here, to tell you that there's more experts than I am and can answer your questions better than I can. I think this is a unique plan that's come up. I can't take credit for it, but I think it's a way to help those districts that are wanting to grow and have some transportation requirements. It's not reasonable to try to fund everything for the 20 years with for the cities and even the counties. So I think this is a good idea. It may need a little bit more work. The questions I've heard so far sitting in here are good questions, but we need to find a way to help these cities, and I think that this idea that has been brought forth to you is an excellent way to try to help these cities grow and address the transportation needs that remember, this body did not pass. That came out of the Oregon Transportation Commission to require the 20-year funding. So, again, I apologize if I'm repeating what Representative Edwards quoted, but thank you for hearing the bill, and I hope that some way we'll find a way to make this happen. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for coming.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dennis Luke. I'm a Deschutes County Commissioner. I'm one of the founding members and current Vice President of the Central Oregon Area Commission on Transportation, which is three counties and all of our cities. I'm a member of the advisory. I'm also one of the founding members and current member of the Bend Metropolitan Planning Organization and member of many planning advisory committees for the Oregon Department of Transportation. As a former member of this House, I supported all of the transportation packages that came forward. So I don't consider myself an ODOT basher, and I've worked with them on a lot of different projects. And what I'm going to tell you today, I have told the Transportation Commission, their region manager, and stand ready to help them in any way I can. We do support the bill. There is a letter, should be a letter in your file from our chair over the Deschutes County Commission. But the biggest problem has been talked about quite a bit today is the transportation planning rule. Lapine, which is Oregon's newest city, has an intersection that's failing. We also have in Lapine the first shovel-ready industrial site in the state. And if you give you some idea, when the traffic leaves Bend going south, over half the traffic count goes off at Sun River and Spring River, which is halfway to Lapine. So by the time it gets there, half the traffic left Bend didn't even get to Lapine. Redmond, as we were talked about, just spent, thanks to the state of Oregon, the local government, local citizens.
And me.
And Gene. And the federal government, just spent tens of millions of dollars to do the reroute in Redmond. And the county owns a piece of industrial property right by the airport that we've been told that if we generate one trip on that piece of property, we're going to have to come up with over $200 million to do further improvements on a state highway that's just got opened, plus what they've all done on Highway 126. The Sun River Interchange is probably one of the, and we've been told by ODOT, one of the premier projects that showed cooperation. The county, until the prices went up and they opened bids, actually had more money into the Sun River Interchange than ODOT did. The communities of Sun River, the surrounding communities, and the Sun River Homeowners Association all put money into that interchange to make it work, or it wouldn't have happened. The Planning Commission, the Transportation Commission has told us that for quite a while, and they quit doing it after I said this, but they kept saying they didn't want local traffic on state highways. And my comment to them, if you don't want local traffic on state highways, then don't put them in the middle of our cities. I don't know of any town in Oregon that doesn't have a state-operated highway going through it. And by the transportation planning rule, because ODOT doesn't have the funds, even if the county or city had their funds and the private developer had their funds, ODOT would not have their funds as part of the partnership. And so by using the transportation planning rule, they can put a de facto moratorium on a project. And they do not have the same responsibility that a city or county does that's been imposed on them by the legislature, where you have to have a plan to take that moratorium off. They can leave that moratorium on there, and there's absolutely nothing you can do about it because they don't have the money. And so the bill is a start. I think somewhere, maybe in the interim, there needs to be more discussion about the transportation planning rule. We do not advocate that our highways fail. Our intersections, the ones in Bend, Redmond, and Lapine, fail 2 hours every day. The other 22 hours, they work fine. We would just like to have some of the same congestion ratio that Springfield, Eugene, or not Portland. Portland has too much. Maybe Salem has. And I don't fault the Transportation Commission and the Oregon Department of Transportation for wanting to keep the congestion level down. We want to keep the congestion level down. But I told the Transportation Commission, if I had to choose between congestion and jobs, I'd take jobs. So, thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. Art Schlack and John Chandler. Art had another hearing, and if he doesn't make it back, we'll submit testimony. Unless you want to speak for him today, Mr. Chandler.
Madam Chair, I'm sure the counties would not appreciate me having their proxy, although things would work much better if I did, I suspect. Madam Chair, members of the committee, John Chandler, Oregon Home Builders Association, here in emphatic support of House Bill 3379. I'm a previous member of the Redmond City Council. I grew up in Culver and used to play ball against Maupin, and it does my heart good to see Central Oregon cities continuing the good work. There's a very creative bill, and Hillsborough, of course. Very creative approach to a very difficult problem. I just want to spend a little bit of time talking about the TPR, because that's come up repeatedly throughout this hearing, and probably most of you aren't experts on it. I testified against the transportation planning rule in 1991, in August, if I remember correctly. I don't recall the exact day, but I could find it for you because my appendix blew out that very evening, and I hold the TPR responsible for... That's not an affirmed diagnosis, but I'm pretty sure it's connected. The transportation planning rule, I'm not a big fan of it. I'll state that for the record. I understand the need for planning. I think the fundamental mistake we've made with the TPR and what we see reflected in this piece of legislation and its approach to the TPR is that we combined the notions of planning without at this and the requirements for planning, which I think is good. Everybody agrees we should plan ahead. We should line up our land uses with our transportation system and make sure those are operating in sync. The mistake we made was we didn't add the funding component along with it. That was the first big mistake. The second big mistake was that we held the local governments responsible for compliance with a system they had very little influence over. ODOT sets the standards regarding congestion, regarding road type, regarding access. DLCD sets the standards regarding land uses and types of uses and intensity of uses. The legislature allocates the money or too often does not allocate the money. And the local governments are sitting there, oftentimes with state highways running through the middle of downtown, oftentimes with pressing needs for economic development and other sorts of local activity, and absolutely no way to effectively have an impact on state policy on transportation, land use, or money. Had we combined and had this legislature in sessions passed, put money up on the transportation side to go along with it, we wouldn't have these sorts of issues in front of us. This bill, as I say, is a very creative attempt. It's unfortunate that that local governments have to go to that level of, frankly, a bank shot to fund what is necessary state infrastructure. At the same time, we should be having a conversation about congestion and how much is acceptable. Is it jobs versus passes through red lights? Is it a way of allocating land uses in such a way or counting land use in such a way that you don't get the impact on the transportation? Those are good conversations to have. I think an even more fundamental conversation to have is what should drive our community design. Should it be the planning alone? Should it be planning plus money? Should it be some balance there? Should it be a way to actually check back in on these policies with legislative oversight on a regular basis so we make sure we don't get too far ahead of ourselves in any particular direction, be it development or planning or financing? I would ask you to pass this bill. I'd also encourage you in other possible pieces of legislation this session not to exacerbate the problem that you see in front of you with the transportation planning rule. I don't expect this legislature to take on the TPR, and arguably it's an administrative action, as we've done by DLCD and ODOT in the first place. But I think there are possibilities for making the situation that you see in front of you worse in some other areas. There's probably some ways to make it better. And if I might conclude, Madam Chair, with a shameless plug for a piece of legislation that I have in this session for the Home Builders, House Bill 3032, which would essentially hold state agencies to the same standards local governments are held to with regard to moratoria. In other words, when a local government declares a moratorium, they have 6 months to fix the problem. If a state agency says they don't have capacity or don't have systems in place, they have no obligation under the law to fix the problem. We believe that's probably an unfair treatment for states versus local governments, and we'd like to see that bill move forward. Shameless plug ended with that, and I'll take any questions on the bill I'm supposed to be testifying about. Thank you.
You owe me a minute.
Yes, ma'am.
Remember that.
It's the lightest I've gotten off in any committee this session.
You must have just talked fast. And with that, I don't see any other questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Jerry Bohard from ODOT.
Good afternoon, Chair Beyer, committee members. Jerry Bohard, a Division Administrator for Transportation Development Division. I think you've heard about the different aspects of the bill, and I also think you've heard a little bit about some of the concerns that the agency had. Two in particular that I will highlight, and that is one of the suggestions is that, as written right now, House Bill 3379 gives the Oregon Department of Transportation the authority to determine the sequestration zones. It would be our recommendation that the Oregon Economic and Development, Community Development Department, as the agency responsible for economic development, to determine the sequestration zones, given their responsibility and their expertise. I also believe, and again, I think that some of the amendments that you're seeing will address this, that Section 6 appears to indicate that Land Conservation and Development Commission has the authority to make the determination for the extension of time or alternative funding methods, and should the local government not be able to meet the funding requirements. It would be our recommendation that the language be changed to be clear that it's the Oregon Transportation Commission which has this authority, to be consistent with the other duties and responsibilities of the commission. Throughout this bill, there are a number of locations where rulemaking will be required, but on the whole, we believe that this will potentially be an additional tool for funding transportation projects. So with that, I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. Committee? Don't see any more questions. Thanks a lot. Well, and yes.
Madam Chair, for the record, Doug Riggs, Central Oregon Cities Organization. I did want to echo the comments just made by ODOT that we have attempted to incorporate some of the comments that ODOT had into the blue copy of the amendment that you have. I've also had discussions with City Hillsborough's Representative Jack Isselman, and we're happy to make the changes to ensure that we address the SIP comments. We anticipate, and we've also talked to the counties about some amendments that we are working on. So we anticipate being able to come back to you with something to take down the Ledge Council in about 24 hours. And so if it is the will of the chair and the committee to move this down to the next step of the process, which would be the Revenue Committee, and then hopefully on to the Subcommittee on Economic Development and Transportation, we'd certainly be willing to work with the committee in the next several days to try to see if we can get that done. All so right. I really want to thank the committee for their questions and the time today.
Thank you. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3379. And committee, I'm going to go ahead and quickly while we were all here, so I'm just going to do the work session on House Bill 2396, which is the lottery bonds to finance the bus rapid transit system in West Eugene, and this bill would be going down to Ways and Means to be considered along with every other lottery bill probably down there. With or without a recommendation, is there a motion?
Yeah.
Open a work session on House Bill 2396.
Yes, Madam Chair, I move House Bill, so this is House Bill 2396. Do we have amendments?
Yes, Patrick.
Madam Chair, thank you. Members, we have before you House Bill 2396-3 amendments. These combined -1 amendments, which were requested by Representative Holvey, one of the chief sponsors, and -2s, which were requested by Representative Edwards, one of the chief sponsors. I think Chris Schultz may still be in the room and could answer our questions if the committee has any. If not, we have fiscal and revenue statements for those amendments in your packets.
Thank you, Patrick. And we can go ahead and take a motion.
Yeah.
My preference is the recommendation, but
okay.
Let's see.
We first have to move the -3s, correct?
Yes.
So, Madam Chair, I move the -3 amendments to House Bill 2396.
The -3 amendments to House Bill 2396 have been moved by Representative Call. Any discussion? Any questions, I guess, of anyone? Seeing none, any objections? Seeing none, the -3 amendments have been adopted, and they're
Madam Chair, with great respect, I move House Bill 2396 as amended to the committee on to the floor with subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means without recommendation. As passed.
Representative Berger has moved House Bill 2396 as amended to the floor with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means without recommendation. Any discussion? Representative Schaffler?
If without recommendation gets a unanimous vote, Madam Chair, that's fine. But I would, with recommendation, if I had my way. But if it means a less than unanimous vote, then I don't have to have that. So I'll be supporting the motion.
Any other discussion?
I would just echo Representative Schaffler's statements, although I do think this is an unbelievably worthy project and would hope that we could send it out of the committee with a due pass recommendation with unanimous consent. But if that is not possible, then I'll support the motion under advisement now.
Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I would also support this with a due pass recommendation.
And I noticed a few. I didn't know if I missed the comment down there or...
Madam Chair, if I could speak to my motion, it would be... This is a very worthy project. It is one of many very worthy projects that I think that the Ways and Means Committee should consider. And therefore, I have no problem moving this very worthy project to the Committee in Ways and Means to look at it. I think it would be important that this move today with unanimous vote without recommendation.
Yes. All right.
I support my colleague.
Okay. Well, given the motion we have on the table and the comments, I think we'll just go ahead and vote on the motion that's on the table. So, the motion on the table is to pass House Bill 2396 to the floor without a recommendation, with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. And take the vote.
Representative Bailey?
Aye.
Representative Benz?
Aye.
Representative Berger?
Aye.
Representative Boone? Aye. Representative Edwards?
Aye.
Representative Schaffler?
Aye.
Representative Wagner?
Aye.
Representative Gilman?
Aye.
Representative Call?
Aye.
Chair Byer? Aye. The motion passes. And the work session on House Bill 2396, it has passed and is on its way to Ways and Means. And I'm closing the work session and opening a public hearing on House Bill 3138. Patrick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill, House Bill 3138, increases the annual appropriation to the Department of Transportation Small Cities Program from $1 million per year to $5 million per year.
Thank you.
Hurtling its way up.
All right. Craig Honeyman, Denny Ross, and Eileen Stein. Yeah. And we have two bills left here, so we'll be expeditious. We can get this all done. Craig Honeyman, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Craig Honeyman. I'm the Legislative Director for the League of Oregon Cities. We represent all 242 cities in the state of Oregon, but I'm here today to reference specifically the transportation funding needs of fully two-thirds of Oregon cities who are considered small cities under the statute that this bill seeks to address, defined as populations 5,000 or less. I'm joined this afternoon by five small city officials who will tell you about their city's transportation needs and challenges. But as you listen to them, I want you to think of the 163 other small cities who are not here today who I believe could tell you similar stories. First, I want to thank the committee for agreeing to introduce this bill as a standalone committee bill at the request of the League. And I want to acknowledge that we understand that the fortunes of this bill and the concept behind it probably relate specifically to the creation of new revenues, the ability of new funding to fund the additions that this bill is calling for. So if it is your desire, Madam Chair and members of the committee, to attach this as an amendment to House Bill 2120, we would fully support that. The purpose of the bill is to bring Oregon Small Cities Program into the 21st century by increasing the share of the state highway fund that they receive from $1 million to $5 million. This program is over 20 years old, and to my knowledge, the amount that is allotted to the Small Cities Program has not been addressed since at least 1991. Currently, that allotment is split 50-50 between the city's direct allocation from the State Highway Fund and ODOT, $500,000 each. As drafted, House Bill 3138 proposes maintaining the $500,000 city contribution and increasing ODOT's to $4.5 million. Program funds can only be used on city streets that are part of the state highway system, and then for those deemed deficient in terms of capacity or for safety. It's a competitive grant program that is managed by the local government section of ODOT, which establishes specific criteria, receives and judges project application, and makes the awards. Not addressed in this bill, because it's not part of the statute, is the agreement that the League of Oregon Cities has with ODOT on a $25,000 per grant cap. So do the math, that funds about 40 projects a year, but at $25,000, I'm told that might get you a pretty fancy driveway, and that's about it. If an increase is granted by this legislature, we would seek to negotiate with ODOT for an increase in that grant cap. Now, while representing cities of all sizes, what motivates the League to ask for your consideration of this bill is that all too often small cities are left behind in terms of funding allocations. Indeed, the Federal Highway Administration funding formulas don't even recognize cities under 5,000. And while we think ODOT's system of allocating the city's share of the state highway fund is fair, the small cities, we would argue, continue to fall behind. Now, before turning testimony over to the several small city officials who are here, I do want to acknowledge a couple of things. First and foremost is ODOT. Over the years, the League has enjoyed a good partnership with them. As with you in the legislature, we share common constituencies. And this relationship is no more important in these rough economic times than when we're looking at investments in transportation infrastructure to fuel an economic recovery. In addition to MPOs and cities over 5,000 which are receiving federal recovery funds, ODOT has set aside $5 million for small cities in Oregon. These communities will be competing for grants, not unlike the program that we're talking about here today that are trying to upgrade, and will be held accountable to timelines, job creation standards, just like the big cities. We understand ODOT did not have to do this, and we are grateful to them for doing so. But these funds, I would submit to you, are only a start, a down payment, if you will, on a problem that has been a long time in the making and will take more than a one-time infusion of federal cash to correct. So just as the Jobs and Transportation Act of 2009 is a vehicle by which we hope to start and to jumpstart the economy and to sustain, rather, the jumpstart of the economy that the federal stimulus funds creates, so too does House Bill 3138 sustain a long-term commitment to small cities. Let me also acknowledge that all transportation entities, ODOT, MPOs, cities and counties, we've all significantly fallen behind. While counties are not impacted by this bill, ODOT and larger cities are. So I wish to close by saying that in whatever manner this committee may decide to go forward with this bill, we at the League are willing to discuss those concerns of our partners, whether it's the total amount of the allocation or the split. Our goal is merely to help smaller cities begin to have an impact on their transportation needs. So at the conclusion of all this, Madam Chair and members of the committee, I stand by to receive instructions from you as to how you might like to proceed in making determinations about a palatable level of funding and an allocation split among Oregon's transportation partners. With that, I'll conclude. Stand for questions either now or at the conclusion of our presentation.
We'll get through the panel.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I appreciate this opportunity to testify for this particular bill. And again, I'm Dennis Ross, and I'm still the mayor of Moffitt. The potential of increasing the small city allotment grant program that we have now, which is capped at 25, and raise it to as much as 100,000, would benefit us in several ways, and still keep the projects underneath the trigger that requires the extra expenses brought about by Bureau of Labor Industry, while still maintaining the Davis-Bacon prevailing wage rules. This would help us get more project for the dollar and eliminate some of the very expensive triggered by larger projects. It would increase the economy of scale of getting more money working at once, and your projects could be bigger. It would create longer and more meaningful construction jobs for the projects and make the in-kind monies that we do have go further. And I'll come to that a little bit later. City Moffitt over the years has benefited from several non-highway ODOT grants, including an immediate opportunity grant that we got in 2003, which was half the cost of a 900-foot road that started out with 8,000 yards of fill, it seemed like. You can't do much in Moffitt without fill. And to that, we've built a medical clinic, an assisted care facility, and there's an 80-home development that's served by that one road. A couple of years later, we got a small city allotment grant of $25,000. And we used it to resurface one street. But in order to get that done and install the sidewalks on both sides, the city had to put more money in from our pocket than from the grant. So we can make it go far, but not very often. Now we have a second small city allotment grant of $25,000 that we've added to a joint city ODOT reconstitution of our downtown Main Street, which is a great opportunity to partner with ODOT, and it's going very well. If the allotment program were a little more robust, we could more effectively enact our capital improvement plan in terms of building and surfacing streets. We'd also be able to create better planning in coordinating the street projects with what's underneath it. In other words, our new series, which we've gotten rid of the wooden pipes, the new sewers and the new water while we're doing those streets, and we could combine those out of different fundings. We have several projects in the capital improvement plan that we're putting together now that cost at least twice as much as the current $25,000 cap. And these, in turn, would cost the city more in-kind money than the grant as currently limited. The other aspect of that is we've had to break our capital improvement plan projects into smaller, more less efficient pieces, just so we can keep from spending too much money at one time. We've got a fairly limited city road budget each year, and a lot of that is personnel costs and the operations of costs and maintaining the streets we already have. So our funds don't build much new street, even when it's coupled with the current grant amounts. Some of the city streets in the city have never been paved ever since they were platted in the third level basement in Chicago about 100 years ago. So what we're doing is we're having to do this as our empty lots are filled with new building projects. We have, and will continue to have, hard choices to make between street development and expanding capacities on street already in existence. An increase in the cap to the small city allotment grants will result in both short and long-term jobs, better planning, and a more efficiently put together capital improvement plan. And with that, thank you very much.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I am still Eileen Stein, and I am still the city manager in Sisters. What I want to do is, if you'll refer to the letter that I gave you in my last testimony, I gave you the west side of Sisters. This letter shows you the east side of Sisters, and right in between is a city that was platted pretty much in the square grid pattern. And so the city of Sisters has been able to use the small city allotment grants in a couple of ways in the past 8 years, and we're waiting a word on a third application. So if I can just direct your attention to that visual in my letter, in 2002 we received a small city allotment grant for a project that is labeled on your aerial there as the Jefferson Project. That project allowed us to actually create a linkage on Jefferson Avenue from Locust Street by our Creekside Park to Highway 20. The effect of this project allowed residential traffic on the south side of the main drag in Sisters to get to Highway 20 without necessarily having to access Cascade Avenue or Highway 20 through the downtown area. That's been a very important transportation congestion alleviation link for us in Sisters. In 2006, we again applied for a small city allotment grant and received $25,000 to contribute to the parking lot and street construction improvements associated with our new civic center. So if I can direct your attention to that area labeled Civic Center, some of you that are familiar with Sisters may know that that particular site is the site of the former Sisters Middle School. We built a new high school. The old high school became the new middle school, and the old middle school was torn down, and we were able to redevelop that site with a new library and a new city hall. And the building East Cascade Avenue there between Locust and Cedar allowed us to create another way for residential traffic to get from the east side of Sisters to the downtown area without having to access the Locust Highway 20 intersection, which is one of two problematic intersections that we have in Sisters that we're addressing with our new transportation system plan. The project that we're about to hopefully will receive is the project that's labeled East Cascade Avenue. Now, I realize that I drew a line longer than this project area actually is. It really terminates at about Tamarack Street, not Cowboy Street. That project is only going to be sidewalk and pedestrian-related improvements. And so I guess the point that I want to make is the Jefferson Project was an asphalt overlay only, no curbs, sidewalks. The Civic Center, that project was actually about $34,000, so we had to contribute our own funds to that to make that project happen. The Civic Center project was about $110,000, so the $25,000 allowed us to write down the cost of that for the three participating jurisdictions. And the East Cascade project is will come in just a little over $25,000, but it's only sidewalk. So I guess I wanted to reemphasize that $25,000 is buying just about a driveway these days. And so in order to do any project that's meaningful, we really do need to raise that limit to something higher than just $25,000. As we look to economic stimulus with the federal government, ODOT has graciously carved off about $5 million for small cities. That's one-time money. And so in order for small cities to do anything meaningful, we to be able to raise the limit on this and bring more money in for small city projects is just about the only two ways that any economic stimulus is reaching your smallest cities in Oregon. So we would appreciate your consideration of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Seeing none. Thank you for coming. I'm glad we can make it worth your while with two bills instead of just one. Bill Currier, Don Otterman, and Peggy Gray. So Mr. Currier, we'll go ahead and get started.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of House Bill 3138. My comments will be brief. The City of Adair Village, I'm Mayor of the City of Adair Village, and Adair Village has, like many cities in Oregon, fallen behind on our in-city transportation needs. In our case, some of our residential streets are needing to be resurfaced, and we have some curbs that need to be redone. One of the issues that we face is that being a competitive grant and being limited to $1 million for all cities in Oregon, and with the cap of 25,000, there's essentially only 40 cities that will be able to achieve projects annually into this project. And according to our city engineer and information from my city manager, we would be able to pave or resurface or relay, I should say, and recurb an older area of town that's been dilapidating over time, about a tenth of a mile with the 25,000. This happens to be a fairly narrow, these streets happen to be fairly narrow, so we can get about a tenth of a mile at that rate just to cover this one older area of town. We would be looking at 12 to 15 years on an annual basis, assuming we won the grant every year, which is also not likely. So we would encourage you to consider supporting an increase in the total amount allotted for all cities in Oregon, and then the league could, you know, renegotiate the cap to have a more meaningful amount that allowed the city to pursue a project that had a lower cost factor. One of the issues that we look at is that mobilizing the equipment and materials to do that small of a stretch of street is very cost inefficient. And a larger scale project on the neighborhood of $100,000 would actually give us a much greater return. We'd probably get 20% more street, basically, and curb rework for that same amount of money. And then I guess my final point would be that while the recovery funds coming down to us through ODOT on the one-time basis are certainly appreciated and will get things rolling, in the long term, if we don't have an ongoing program to provide funding, then we won't be able to complete, in the case of Adair Village, the project of resurfacing and recurbing this particular older area of town. So we have some momentum here out of the gate in the next year or two, but then we need to keep that momentum up to finish that and catch the city up. And I'm sure other cities in Oregon are in the same situation. And that's all I have.
Thank you. Mr. Otterman, hopefully that's right.
This is. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Don Otterman. I'm the city manager for the City of North Plains. North Plains is located in Representative Edwards' district, and I'm pleased to see him today. We have made application for small cities allotment grants for the last 10 years, every year for the last 10 years. We have been successful 3 out of 10 years. The first year, the $25,000 overlaid about 2 blocks of city street. We just received the grant this year. We're getting 1 block. So our street maintenance issues are not being met by the limitations of the program, as well as other programs that the city used to be able to qualify for. We did qualify for community development block grant funds. However, our income levels now are too high to qualify for that program, so we cannot qualify for block grant money. There in Washington County, there is the Major Streets Transportation Improvement Program, which is a levy that started out in 1986 with Washington County. It was folded in to the county tax base with Measure 47 and is allocated to the larger cities and to the county as far as street projects. However, smaller cities are given a small pool of money to divide up amongst the small cities. Our city at this point has drawn down all of its money. We have $111,000 without any hope of receiving any additional money for at least the next 6 years. And that money will probably be used to replace a road culvert that has failed this last winter. And our cost of that project is $75,000. So we will be close to being out of Major Streets Transportation Improvement money. We use our gas tax, both county and state gas tax, for personnel and for materials and services, line items in our budget for crack sealing and for pothole repair in the streets. And that is the total amount of funding available for the city for street repairs. We support the increase in the amount of funds for the Small Cities Allotment Program. We hope that the league will be able to negotiate a larger cap for the cities so that we can make a more effective use of those funds in the future. And due to your time limitations, I will end at this point. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the House Transportation Committee. I'm named Peggy Gray, and I'm the city manager for the city of John Day. I thank you for this opportunity to testify on House Bill 3138. Like other small rural cities, the city of John Day has experienced a serious decline in our street revenues. We used to receive revenues from the county through their federal timber receipts, and we use that money for all our capital improvement projects. For the last two fiscal years, we received no money from the county, and we used to use those. We partnered the Small Cities Allotments Grant with those monies from the county to do our major street improvement projects. Now, without the county's help, we can no longer provide for any more capital improvement projects in our current budget. We received the state gas tax, which funds approximately half of half of our personnel services for our street funds. That is our only source of income that we have coming into the city's street fund at this time. Out of 13.5 miles of the city's streets, over 50% of our streets are not in compliance with our adopted transportation system plan. Of this 50%, the streets have nothing more than chip seal over gravel surface. So you can see this is a really large task for our small cities to fund these projects without help from the state. We have received small city allotments in the past, and this year we got one, and we're going to put we're planning to chip seal two major collector streets in the city of John Day. We would like to have done a 2-inch overlay, but the $25,000 is not enough to fund that. So we are looking into alternative revenue sources, such as a transportation utility fee. However, our city council is really reluctant to do that due to the cost to the citizens. To replace the county funds that we received in the past would cost the city citizens about $35 a month to replace those funds. And the council is just really reluctant to implement those at these times. And the list that I gave you, I do have a critical street project list there I'd like you to look at to see our needs, and there are several million dollars. And with that, I just would like to really ask you to support the Small Cities Allotment Program. We would really appreciate any help that you can give us. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Benz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I should have asked this earlier of the other panels, but how much enthusiasm is there in your respective cities for an increase in the gas tax to pay for these streets?
I'll speak for the city of John Day. Our council did talk about that, and I think they do support that, even though it would be a bit, burden on the city citizens. However, they think that the outcome would be more beneficial to the cities. We were thinking about a local gas tax just for our city, but with only two gas stations, they did not think, ODOT said that wouldn't even be feasible. So the city would support an increase in the gas tax. It would help ours.
Follow up.
There it is. since I represent the good half of John Day, that is the east half.
Yes.
On the east
that's
side
right.
of your one stoplight.
Yes.
I really want to know about those people mostly.
Those people, I can't speak for those people. They're outside of my district.
Oh, they are.
Yes. I'm sorry.
The other.
Adair Village lacking a gas station, we're all in favor.
And Chair Beyer, Representative Bentz, our city council has not taken up that issue, so I'm afraid I can't answer your question.
Follow up. We'll just take your opinion.
My opinion would be that I think a majority of the people would support a gas tax, because one of the things about the two gas stations that we have within our jurisdiction is probably about 80% of the business to those in those gas stations comes off of Highway 26. And so I think that they would see the wisdom of capturing those funds.
Thank you.
Representative Widener.
I'll pass.
You'll pass. Representative.
That's good enough, Madam Chair.
Good.
a couple things. One, the timber receipts, it's not a question about timber receipts anymore. It's a question about, does our federal government let us back on our land to people out in your beautiful part of the world make a living? That's the question. That's the argument. And until they do, we're stuck, and we can just sit and watch those beautiful, productive forests burn and rot. The other thing is, what do I hear all three of you saying? If we pass a gas tax package with a gas tax in it, all three of you are going to go to your community and support it and encourage your constituents and neighbors to vote no on a referral to repeal a gas tax package that this legislature passes this session. And that question goes to every single local official that testified in favor of this bill and the one before.
Chair Beyer, Representative Schroeppler, part of my answer would be that city managers are in a tough position to advocate for passage or non-passage of legislation. I think that if I was asked the question of whether I would support the increase in the gas tax, I believe I would say I would, because our city is in that dire of a need to get funding for the maintenance of our city streets. We have our city was founded in 1910. It incorporated in 1963. So we have been an incorporated city for 45 years approximately. We still have gravel roads in our city. The average value of houses in our community is between about $275,000 and $300,000, and we still have gravel roads.
And, Madam Chair, follow up, and you folks don't even have to answer the question, and I shouldn't even put you on the spot. But you know what? We need local officials to go out and support these things. I can get out a map and show you where tax referrals have failed and where they've passed. I can promise you it ain't outside of a very core part of metropolitan Oregon, including my own district, which I've supported in the past, and they've crashed. But to the city manager, this goes for every public employee. As an employee of a district, a city, a state, on your own free time, you can advocate for anything you want. You just cannot do it when you're on the clock or use government's resources to do it. So, but we need help all the way around this state, and we need your state legislators from the hinterland supporting these packages. Otherwise, there's not going to be any help coming. But once again, the timber thing, it's not about receipts anymore. It's about getting our federal government to let us back on our own land to make a living.
Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to point out to Mr. Utterman that I have a tiny slice of North Plains, so I support your district too, Rep. Edwards, and I do all I can to buy gas at that Chevron station as often when I'm going back and forth on 26.
Thank you. I better get finished here so we can get to the next one. Thanks for coming today.
Thank you.
Jim Chambers.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Jim Chambers. I'm from the city of Toledo. I am not a politician anymore. I was a city councilor and mayor there for 14 years, and this bill has meant quite a bit to me to see our streets improved. You've heard a lot of stories today, and it is true. The $25,000 limitation does not do very much today. When I first came on city council, we were probably paying around $30 a ton for asphalt, and now it's up to $85 to $110 a ton. So it's not going as far as it used to. We have considered several different things. I don't know exactly where they are right now. But one of the things, and you heard it talked about today, was, you know, a transportation system plan, you know, a utility tax in essence. And where that goes, I imagine, will depend quite a bit on what happens with the gas tax in the future, and where we can see that. Toledo also has one street light and one gas station, and we have a small county. There's 44,000 people in the county, and then in there's two large cities, and the rest are small. So we have four small cities that Lincoln County depends on this funding for. I know they all utilize it. The other thing about Toledo is that we have a large pulp and paper mill there, Georgia Pacific, that takes a tax on our streets. They do pay a large amount, or they don't, their truckers do pay a large amount of PUC fees and everything else. So in some ways, this is fees coming back to help maintain those streets. And our last overlay went about three blocks and about an inch and a half thick, and that's not going to cut it on a truck route. There needs to be more asphalt put down. And in our truck route alone, there's probably eats up about 5 miles of the 25 miles that we have. So this bill for to continue, and Toledo does depend on this bill. It depends on it largely, and we look at this as a big help in getting things through and getting our streets back to where they should be. And even on the basis of $25,000 a year, we would probably need, you know, $100,000 a year to maintain the roads and maintain the life of the asphalt that's there. So it's a large part of what we depend on. You know, we expected but didn't receive anything, you know, in the ways of the stimulus package. And so, you know, this is the only stimulus that we have. This is what we depend on. And I really do encourage you to endorse this bill. This is an investment in Oregon's infrastructure, whether it's local or county or state. It's all very important, and all the streets are important in our state. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Schaffler.
Yeah, I'm sorry I didn't hear the gentleman. Did you say Toledo?
Yes.
You know Alan Brown, I imagine?
Oh, yes.
A fine American.
Yes. Had a lot of talks with Alan at the Oregon Transportation Commission, and also as a member of the Area Commission on Transportation, which I served on for several years. I know Alan very well, and have asked him to help us out quite a bit on this.
Smart idea. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Doug Tindall.
Chair Byer, members of the committee, good afternoon. Doug Tindall, Deputy Director with the Department of Transportation. I think what you're hearing here today on this bill is a plea for funding roads and streets around the state. You've heard from a particular sector, the smaller cities, the cities with 5,000 and under population, but I think it's reflective of the needs that you're seeing in the transportation system across the state as we virtually are liquidating the assets that we have. There's a lot of discussion with as the governor kicked off a transportation funding package, and many discussions. The League of Oregon Cities was there for those discussions, and we worked out an agreement as part of those discussions that the governor's bill would move forward a funding split that was 50% to state highways, which carries 60% of the traffic, 30% to county roads, and 20% to city streets, an increase from where we are today. this program, the small cities, a special city allotment program, has been in place for a long time, and it was in place when I started here 30 years ago. And at that time, the split was 68% to state highways, 20% to counties, and 12% to cities. So for where we are now is already 4% greater, and the proposal would increase going to cities from what it was, and the proposed transportation package would raise that even further. So I think the funding is there. This particular discussion about increasing the special city allotment did not, to my mind, and I was in most of those meetings, and I know Chair Beyer was probably in all of them, I don't remember this coming up, so the timing seems a bit odd, that it's something we probably should have discussed in terms of the larger transportation package. But again, what you're hearing is unquestionably needs across the state, and needs as in the portion of the state that reflects small cities. With that, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions? Seeing none, thank you. I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 3138 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2956. Patrick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2956 requires a request for proposals and invitations to bid for construction, reconstruction, purchase, rent, lease, or acquisition of interstate bridges contain provisions related to the environmental protection, worker safety, employment of apprentices, and preference to procuring products and materials fabricated in Oregon, Washington, or Idaho.
Okay, so who, we can bring up Ryan and Kevin and Bob and Joe. And we'll make sure we get the people that don't live in the building all the time, so that if we have to carry this over, we can do that.
It's me. I get you up here. Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Kevin Jensen. I'm the business manager for the Ironworkers in Portland, Oregon. I would like to thank you for hearing on our behalf, House Bill 2956, and on behalf of all the shop and field iron workers, encourage you to take action by passing this bill into law. It's a fairly simple policy. It states that for any RFP or invitation to bid on an interstate bridge project, the contracting agency will give preference to procuring products, materials, and components that are fabricated within the boundaries of this state or an adjoining state to the maximum extent feasible and practicable. The bill outlines certain components to be taken into account. Whether transportation costs and other conveniences favor or disfavor using products, materials, and components manufactured in this state or the adjoining state, whether the sites at which these products are fabricated are close in proximity to the bridge location, and whether those bridge components can be recycled, there is nothing in this bill that expressly requires the use of local products, materials, and components, only that an attempt to be made. There are two interstate bridge projects in this state, one the Columbia River Crossing Project, the other a bridge in Ontario over the Snake River into Idaho. We've all talked and heard about the Columbia River Crossing Project, $4 billion job. It's a job stimulus plan in and of itself. It would create many job opportunities for local fabricators and for outside iron workers within our jurisdiction. We are currently at approximately 12% unemployment rate for journeymen, and 20% of our apprentices are unemployed. I urge you to pass House Bill 2956. I believe it will help encourage local employment, and it will also help encourage suppliers of these people that fabricate and provide steel for the bridge.
Thank you.
I'll take any questions.
Okay. Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for bringing this forward. I started out this session with a bill that would have required Buy Oregon First and Hire Oregon First, but because of some pesky little details, I was asked to not push it forward, but I'm glad to see this come forward, and I'll support it.
I believe that, you know, that's also addressed in here, that you have to take into consideration applicable state and federal law. We're just looking for the consideration of this in any request for proposal that comes forward.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Call.
And I guess what's really interesting about this, what I was thinking about this weekend, is the kind of strange convergence between buying manufacture local and reducing your carbon footprint. You know, whereas before we may have never been able to put mandates in legislation to promote Oregon products over any other products. But if we're really talking about trying to lessen our carbon footprint and do kind of environmental objectives, we might be able to see our way clear to really utilizing local products over any others simply by trying to reach environmental goals. And I think that that's something that's real clear in what's presented here. I think it's real smart. So I'd like to thank you guys for bringing this forward.
And I'd hate to guess at a percentage, but I believe it's somewhere between 60 and 70% of materials used in the fabrication of steel are recycled materials.
Right.
That happen that way.
Any other questions?
Listen
tomorrow. Okay. All right. Well, I just wanted to make sure that, you know, if we ran out of time. So, okay. I have Bob Shiprack now.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be very brief. And members of the committee, Bob Shiprack, Oregon Building Trades Council. Kevin did a fine job summarizing what the intent of this bill is. I want to remind the committee, if indeed this bridge gets built, some have called it, and I've been around the business a long time, this will be the largest public works project in the history of the state. Could employ a lot of people, keep a lot of Oregon and Washington businesses very viable. Also want to remind the committee, if you're not familiar with it, in Kevin's industry, we have one of the most vibrant metal fabricating industries in the country, right in this area, in both from Salem north into Vancouver. So we're aware of certain legal impediments. However, as Representative Call points out, there are things that I think that can be considered in a request for proposal that would give a little bit of advantage and perhaps pass a federal test and it's the Commerce Clause that's usually thrown out at this. But when you look at environmental impacts, I think it's only right that we at least pursue this. It's our responsibility to try and pursue whatever we can do following the law to secure these jobs.
Thank you. Question, yes.
Yeah, when I was working for RH&W, I forget Drew's last name, but he owns Columbia Iron and Wire. He used to be down on 17th and Holgate. Now he's out, I think, on Swan Island. Yeah, right there, right by the bridge crossing. They have a state-of-the-art metal iron fabrication business. And there's a union shop, and I used to go there to both places and pick stuff up. And if Drew didn't get these contracts for whatever reason, it was shipped in from Texas, it would be absolutely criminal. My humble opinion. I have no interest in that business, for in case anyone wants to know, but I think that's a perfect example of what Bob was talking about. And he's not the only fabricator in the area, obviously.
Madam Chair, it's not just metal fabrication, but I'd remind the committee, and it may be in Rep. Widener's district, we also have a very large rebar facility in Oregon that would supply thousands of tons.
And one more thing, Madam Chair, I don't think we should import one thimbleful of gravel for the Oregon side of this bridge.
Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I might also point out that there's another company in the industry that's being considered for building wave energy project devices, as well as some of the other ocean renewable and river renewable devices.
Yes, or Oregon Ironworks.
Oregon Ironworks.
We're located in Clackamas.
I didn't know if we could name names, but yes.
I guess I can.
How about Joe? You wanna?
Yes. Good afternoon, Joe Lesman with the IBEW Local 48 in Portland, Oregon. I just want to echo our support for this bill. It's very important to us. When I was an apprentice, I witnessed a semi-loads of prefabricated support systems hauled in from down south. Of course, we put them in, but it was hard to see that done. And I want to hire Oregon first, buy Oregon first, and the states next door. And I also think, on one hand, we're looking for these to reduce greenhouse gases, the footprint, and why import stuff from China or overseas or import, you know, have stuff brought into the state pre-manufactured by union or non-union, but pre-manufactured worked and installed here. So I want to hop on the bandwagon with these guys. Thank you.
Ryan.
For the record, Ryan Tribbett, here today on behalf of the National Electrical Contractors Association of Oregon. Again, I would like to just reiterate the points made by my colleagues up here. We wholeheartedly support 2956 in its current form, and or if changes need to be made, any sort of preference system that would give local manufacturers preference on it, we would support. I'd also just like to add one other point, though, is that I know there was some polling floating around earlier on in session that with regard to a state stimulus package, that one of the number one things that would increase the general public's confidence in it would knowing that local companies and local workers were getting the jobs. And with that, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Widener.
Since everybody's throwing comments out real quick, and I got four union guys up here, I'm a very strong supporter of just buying American products first and everything, and you guys should walk down in the garage and see how many Toyotas are down there.
Oh, yeah.
When our American car companies are hurting. I'm hoping none of you guys fall into that category.
No.
Be tough. Madam Chair?
It'd be tough.
Five union guys, and I drive a F-154.
Thank you.
Step up to the real world. Get a 350.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Doug. Okay, before you sit down, what kind of car? No.
Thank you, Chair Byard. Doug Tindall, Deputy Director, RODOT again. A Ford F-250 and a Buick.
Okay.
That's the best testimony I've ever heard.
Chair Byer, certainly the concept behind this bill is sound. I think a lot of the reasons have already been stated, that you're manufacturing right at the location, probably in terms of a competitive pricing, that's going to be a huge advantage already. The only things that were raised to the committee, one, the wording in line 12, this is a little technical, but it's this is going to be important because federal law is going to limit, if not outright prohibit, how much we're going to be able to do in favoring particular states. And the second and, there are two ands in line 12, the second and seems to separate out the first part where you're required to give a preference and then take into account into consideration. We're concerned that if we have to give a preference and we have federal funding on a bridge project and the feds won't let us give a preference, we may be sort of stuck. So that probably not a big challenge there. The second thing that I would tell you is that this applies to bridges over the bridges between Oregon and Washington and the second section, bridges between Oregon and Idaho, and you would probably need similar language in those states. There was a bill in Washington that, in my understanding, has not moved that would do the same thing, but we don't always, Oregon does not always do the contracting for those bridges across between states. We have a sharing arrangement where some of them are ours to take care of and some of them are Washington's to take care of. On the Columbia River crossing, we haven't decided yet how that's going to be contracted, whether Washington's going to do it, Oregon's going to do it, or we're going to break it into pieces. With that, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions? Representative
Paul. Yeah, and just to echo a few of your comments, it seems to me though that we can incentivize Oregon products through different mechanisms, right? We can talk about carbon footprint from how far they've been transported. We've got some of the cleanest energy in the world being produced here, so we can talk about the energy being utilized to produce whatever it is that's being fabricated and coming here. And we could utilize those kinds of things as a proxy for state stuff, and I think be very effective. So I would just recommend that we take a look at that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Good point.
Seeing no other questions, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2956, right? And we are adjourned.